Accession number 19594, Reel 3.
Norman Bryant, Reel 3. Any more stories about
Yes, about snakes. Just switch off a minute, will you? Sorry. Talk about snakes. When I first went to India, we started with digging our defensive positions all around Madras area. And as I was digging, so these snakes kept on popping their heads out the hole, out of their holes. And I think this is one reason why I lived through it, because I vowed then that, you know, I was frightened every hour, I kept on digging, so these snakes eat of popping their heads out. And I vowed then that I'd never let the snakes eat me, so I vowed I'd come home.
You were telling me that this Balram was devoted to you or something.
Oh, absolutely. He would sit in at my feet and look at me and say, what can I get you? He'd go and get me, make my bed, clean my rifle, do everything for me. Go and get my cups of tea and see that the Dobe done everything right. And in fact, he said he made me promise I'd fetch him home to England with him after the war. But of course, the powers that be said that all our followers had to leave, and that was the end of Balram. Never see him again.
But he was a fitter, was he?
Oh, he was a fitter, yes. He wasn't an ordinary man. He was a clever, very clever boy.
What was his work like?
Oh, good. He was a good fitter. Ever so good.
You said that you did some training in Malabar?
Oh, yes. And before, then we had a lot of training around Madras area. Then the idea came that instead of the war stopping in Burma as soon as the monsoons came on, we was going to be the 19th Indian Division was going to be fully equipped and fully trained to carry on the war with the monsoons. So they sent us down to the Malabar, and during the monsoon weather, we wanted no village or nothing. We were right in the middle of the jungle. We had to build our own huts and our own places to sleep. We built our own bashes off the ground because the ground was so wet. And we had really a bad time. And I must tell you one beautiful story of the Malabar. We was on exercises with the carriers, and my officer in command was a Captain Pritchard at the time. And him and I got on absolutely wonderful together. We were marvellous, like friends, good friends. Anyway, we was on this manoeuvre and one of my carriers got bogged down. This was in the Malabar. So with that, I sent for another carrier to pull it out. So we put a chain, looked at the ground. The ground was beautiful, firm and hard. We put this chain on this carrier, and within a second, the second carrier was bogged down. So we had two carriers bogged down and didn't know what to do. So Captain Pritchard, we said, what in the hell are we going to get these things out? So Captain Pritchard says, he said, I remember a mile or so back, he said, I see an elephant working in the jungle. He said, I should go back and see if I get it. So he takes a couple of fellas back with him, and half hour or so later, back comes Captain Pritchard with the elephant boy on an elephant. So he said, we'll see if that'll pull it out. So Captain Pritchard said to go very, very careful. He said, because this is a Barbary elephant. He's killed his last two elephant boys. So go very careful. So keep out of the way. So we suggested that we camouflage his carrier up, put the chain on the camera, onto the elephant, and let the elephant pull the carrier out. Well, that was all right. So we all hid in the jungle. So anyway, we etched it up, and the elephant banged like this, and he, like that. He wouldn't pull. So then I said, look, if I could get the wheels of the carrier, if I got in my carrier and got it started and let the tracks go round slowly, we might get somewhere. So Captain Pritchard said, what about if his elephant turns on you, Norman? I said, well, what about getting the Bren guns on him? So there were about 10 machine guns. So we camouflaged his carrier up, got the elephant, and I got in there, and there were about 10 machine guns, Bren guns, trying to, if this elephant had turned around on me. So anyway, I start this machine up and just let the tracks go nicely steady. And the elephant pulled, and he pulled us out just as easy as that. And we done the same with the second one. But we said, well, I did notice that this elephant wouldn't even attempt to pull his carrier out until the engine was started. And as soon as the engine started, he pulled his carrier right out.
Did you notice much difference between people in Malabar as opposed to...
We never met anybody in Malabar, never met anybody. No, I can't remember meeting any civilians at all. We just tipping down with rain all the while, and we kept on doing these. Oh, I did, in the Malabar, I got chased by some wild elephants. There was a clearing, and we were on the clearing, right over the other side of this clearing, I suppose 300 or 400, 500 yards away, were some elephants. Which naturally we didn't think about wild elephants. I suppose they were wild elephants, I don't know. But anyway, we started walking towards them. When they got, I suppose, 100 or 200 yards, they started lifting up their old trunks and started rushing at us. And we ran like the devil and got back into the jungle. They never come out the clearing in the jungle for us. But I think they were chasing us anyway. We thought they were chasing us.
What happened after your training session in Melbourne?
We almost went straight into... Oh, and now I must tell you a little story about Captain Pritchard. As I said, he was my officer in charge of the carriers. And he says, I'm making you up to sergeant. And I says, look, I said, I'm not going to... I said, I'm not going to... I've refused stripes before. I said, no, I don't want to be an officer. I don't want to be a sergeant. So he said, well, he says... What do I say? He says, when the colonel says, you know, are all your Bren carriers ready for work? And I says, one's not ready. And he says, who says so? He says, well, Private Bryant. He says, so I've got to make up. I said, I'm not going to be mad at myself. And that's an obvious. He said, wish you are. So anyway, come on, battalion orders, I was made up. So I refused to wear my stripes. So I was put in charge. And... So anyway, Captain Pritchard called me all the B-fools under the sun. He said, you can do this, you can do that. He said, I can't understand you. He said, you are a bloody fool. Just that's the words he used. So anyway, I goes up in front of the colonel for being improperly dressed, and he asked me. Of course, I helped him to the colonel to be a driver. I used to drive, you know, instruct him a bit. So he knew me quite well, but that didn't cut no ice. He looked at me and asked me what the trouble was. I said, well, sir, I said, I don't think I'm material to be a sergeant.
Was that the true reason?
No, the true reason was that I was just obstinate. I said I was going to be a private, right from the beginning, I said I was going to be a private. And nobody was going to stop me. Why, I don't know, I was so daft. So I said, I didn't, he said, it's nothing to do with you, Brian. He said, it's nothing to do with you, he said. He said, if your superior officers want you made up, he said, you should be only too willing to do these jobs. He said, where would the British Army be if everybody was like you? So he said, have you made up your mind? I said, yes, sir. So he said, right, he said, well, you've got to be punished. He said, you will be reduced to the rank of private. He said, and you will lose all seniority for a 12-month. So I couldn't be made up for a 12-month. So that was my punishment. So, carry on with the story. Now we're in Burma, well into Burma. Right, well, then, of course, I'm going to carry on the story. I'm into Burma. And somebody said to me, Major Pritchard, my captain there will be made up Major in charge of A Company, which I hadn't seen much of him. So... Somebody said to me, was actually right in the thick of Burma. Said, oh, Major Pritchard's looking for you, Norman. I said, oh, yes. And the president came. Somebody said, what the bloody hell have you done, Norman? He said, Major Pritchard's looking all over the show for you. So anyway, after, I think, 2 days, Officer Major Pritchard found me. So I said, good morning, sir. I said, good morning, Norman. He says, how are you? I said, all right, thank you, sir. I said, he said, you take some bloody finding, don't you? I said, what's the trouble, sir? Well, he says, I'm going home. He says, I'm going home tomorrow. He says, time X, number time. And he says, I couldn't go home without saying goodbye to you. And he says, your nuts is a bloody fall after you. Are you? I said, no, I don't think I am, sir. That's Major Pritchard. I never see him again.
So when did you go to Burma?
We went about November 1944, wasn't it? Yes, 1944. At the end of the... we went... with that... oh, Burma, I must tell you that then the orders came that was to go to Burma. And... And while we was at Madras, we'd... Wavell was in charge of us then, and he was inspecting the troops, and it was still helmet time. And this Major Pritchard and I and all our crew lined up alongside one of the roads in Madras. And Lord Wavell came along, inspecting us, and he stopped his car right by our carrier, and with Major Pritchard, he was a captain, of course, he was standing there. And Wavell stopped his car, and he stood up, and he said, and what's your name? I thought he was looking at me, and I was shaking, looking like that. So anyway, he says, I said, what's your name? Anyway, Major Pritchard, or Captain Pritchard, it was then. He said, Captain Pritchard, sir. He said, if you don't hurry up and put a steel helmet on, he said, it'll very soon be Private Pritchard. Anyway, on the battalion orders, or 2 or 3 days later, Wavell says about our division, the dagger's sharp, but the hand is shaky. So, whichever way you like. Anyway, then, just before going into Burma, after doing all our training with these Bren carriers, the authorities to be realised or said that Bren carriers was obsolete, as the Japanese was getting in the trees and dropping their bombs on them. So, as is where Major, Captain Pritchard was, he was then made up to Major and was in charge of one of the companies. That's how we, and of course I was then held of a job. So I had to take my, we took all our Bren gun carriers down to Kirki, which is near Pune, down South India. We took and handed them all in. And then we went into Burma. Well, we got, so I'm really out of work now. All the whole battalion took into Burma was 12 jeeps and trailers. And that, and to take the place of all the rest, we took 40 mules. So all our mechanical things, was all we had was 12 jeeps and trailers. So of course I was a senior mechanic in the battalion then, so...
In the battalion,
I was, so... A lot of them had gone home, one thing or the other, so... I take the Bren gun carriers, as I say, to Kirki. And then we went to... into Burma.
How did you get there?
We caught a steamer. 2 steamers, down at Calcutta, on the Brahmaputra. On the river Brahmaputra. And these old Indian, 2 old Indians was in charge, and these 2 big old flat boats without war motors on. And I think, the battalion was only about 400 or 500 strong, or 500 strong in those days, very, very weak it was. Anyway, we're not up on 2 boats, and this is a story on the Brahmaputra. We had 3 days and 3 nights on the Brahmaputra going up to Dimapur. That's on the Burma border, almost up, getting up towards Imphal and Kohima, up that way. So anyway, when come about 4 o'clock one afternoon, this boat barge drawing alongside the river to. So our colonel says, "What are you stopping here for?" So this captain, he was the captain of the ship, which was a dirty old man, dirty old barge. He said, well, he said, one of my wives lives here. And he says, I've never yet passed it yet unless I stop the night. So our colonel said, this is the British Army going to war. I demand you carry on. So the old Indian fellow says, British Army or not, he says, I've never yet passed this place without stopping the night. And we're stopping the night. So I'm afraid we stayed the night. That was the start of our going into Burma.
He was the captain of the ship?
Yeah, he was the captain of the ship. Yeah, he was only a dirty old man, you know. Don't imagine him as an older girl. He owned the ship. So that was the story of him. So anyway, we get to Demerpur, and that had been that was on the been fighting for that a few weeks before. And then we went through to Imphal and Kohima. We passed them. We left the 2nd Division behind there. And we went onto the banks then of the Chinwin. So we were right up now face to face with the Japanese. We were one side of the Chinwin, the Japanese were the other side of the Chinwin. Then we sent our patrols over. And this is November. That's about November. Then they built a big Bailey Bridge there. And at about beginning of December, our division crossed the Chinwin. We had no opposition at all. The Japanese fled in front of us. And all we... Oh, and then by then, I was a mechanic in charge of the 12 jeeps and trailers. But I was driving a jeep at the time then. So I was driving a jeep as well. And we crossed the Chinwin. And I think we went about 11 or 12 days and 12... days without coming in contact with the Japanese at all. We were marching 10, 15 mile every day until we met them at, I forget the name of the place. Anyway, we met the Japanese and we had our first skirmish with them. And we lost 4 or 5 and the Japanese lost 4 or 5.
What happened in the skirmish?
Well, we was going along and everybody's saying, why did you bloody well stop and fight? You know, they just say enough, you know. Because the Japanese, we heard the Japanese was there, and as we went forward, so the Japanese at the last minute would... But this would go back, but this time they didn't. They stopped in their pre-arranged position and opened fire on our fellas. And I shall never forget that day. We all lay down like that, as you know, we didn't expect it, you know, after being in the jungle for, say, a fortnight without meeting any Japanese, and to see people getting killed around you. Well, I remember laying down like this and looking up at the sky, and it was a beautiful day, and I thought, you know, this is not true, you know, this is not true. I'm in a fantasy or something. You know, there's fellas dead there, and all this bang, 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 and machine gun fire going on, and I don't think any of us took it in to start with. Anyway, that was the first initial fighting with the Japanese. Then I think things got back to normal again. We had another 2 or 3 days. And we... Well, then really it all gets mixed up because we're over the Chinwin. Now we're making towards... we've done the Brahmaputra, that was the first river. Now we've crossed the Chinwin, and we had to make towards the Irrawaddy now. We're going towards the Irrawaddy. Well, don't know what to say. Oh, I remember one instance where the Japanese were shelling us hard, and a fellow by the name of Sergeant Wallace, Arthur Wallace, a friend of mine, and we dug out... little slit trenches, or foxholes as we call them. And the Japanese were shelling us quite hard, and this Arthur Wallace, he jumps into my foxhole alongside him. Really, it wasn't room, and he was absolutely covered in dust and dirt, as you'd imagine. And I said, Arthur, what's on? He said, bloody shell's just landed in my foxhole, Norman. He said, but it never went off. I said, I can't believe it. Yes, he says, he landed there. He said, so I'd never forget, I'd heard the story that in the First World War that the soldiers always knew the shell was going to hit me. And I asked him that then and there. I said, is it true, Arthur? I said that you hear the shell that goes off. He said, do you know, Norman? He said, the moment that shell left that gun, that Japanese gun, he said, I knew it was going to hit me. Isn't that an amazing story?
Yes.
Then we were the first troops to hit the Irrawaddy. And I was ordered to... before this, I was ordered to headquarters, and the second in command was there waiting for me. And it's all brought, it says, this morning it said A and C companies, I can't remember the name of the village, it's a captain of village about 6-7 miles up. He says, and we've just had telephone messages say they've got it all right, but they want their food, so you'll take them. Taking their breakfast because they'd done early morning raid on this place. So he said, you're going across the enemy territory. He said, there's only the two companies up forward. He said, go very careful. He says, you'll have escort of four men. And he said, there's where we are now, and this is your track you're taking. Follow this track. He said, when you get a mile up there, he said, you'll see a major track going this crossways. He said, you go straight across. He said, you see your track going up there. He says, now up there, he says, about a mile up there on the left-hand side, he said, you'll see the battalion or the two companies. I said, very good, sir. So with that, he says, all right, best of luck. Just sir, best of luck, Ron. So I said, sir. So I had this four escort. Takes the track he told me. Then there's the track across. So I stood there, and my escort duly jumped out because I'd heard all the instructions. Oh, this the road going across, he said, go very, very carefully. He said, because it's heavily mined. He said, so look out, and when you cross this road, he says, see, there's no mines or try to. It's only dirt roads. So I said, very good, sir. So of course, these escort mine new, so I stops at the, say we say the crossroads, the cross tracks. So I stopped and I stood on the jeep and I looked and I trying to see if it's... I didn't really know what I was looking for. I've never seen a mine in my life before. So I didn't see that. So there was a sort of a hump in the ground. And I went... So with this, my escort stood behind me. And, you know, they weren't going to be on the jeep to be blown up. They thought, if I get blown up, they'll follow. So I'm not brave, I'm frightened. So anyway, I drove my jeep across... Over there was a sort of arm. I went to the left or the right. I don't know whether left or right now. I don't know. Anyway, I got the other side of the road quite all right and got on our little track. And the boy said, well done, Norm, well done. So they followed my, they walked over my tracks, knowing that they wouldn't be blown up because, you know, it was all right. So anyway, jumped on the track. I had an airborne trailer on the back with the food on. And we meet the company all right. And of course, they was very, very pleased to see us. And we're just making a cup of tea, and we heard a hell of an explosion. So we thought, we didn't know what it was. Anyway, they sent patrols out one thing and another, and back they come and said, that's one of your jeeps that got blown up, Norman. I said, oh dear. So went back, and there was a second in command. He was killed. And one of my drivers, he said, I said, what happened? I think his name was Collis. I never see him again. He was wounded. I said, what happened? And he said, well, he said, the second in command says, you follow Bryant's tracks, he says, and you'll be all right. He says, he said, we've had a message to say he's got through all right. And anyway, I went back. And where I went round, one, the island to the left, so he went down the island to the left as he crossed the left road.
The opposite way?
Yeah. So I was very lucky there. And another good story is when we was going to, we had the, when we with, well, I suppose, about 10 mile from the Irrawaddy, and no troops attached to the Irrawaddy yet. We hadn't got as far as the Irrawaddy. And we were actually then, at this period, we were the first troops to hit the Irrawaddy. So we had orders for two companies to go forward and see if we could hit the Irrawaddy, and there was a village there. Well, we got there and we met some Gurkha patrol, and they said they've just had a skirmish with the Japanese up the road, so they were about, the Japanese was about. So we carried on. We never met anybody until we got this village. And we got this village, and that was on, right on the banks of the Irrawaddy. Now, we were then the very, very first troops to see the Irrawaddy. So we had a little skirmish with these Japanese and finished them off. And looked across the Irrawaddy. We could see the Japanese, the other side of the Irrawaddy, washing their trucks down and bathing. Because they didn't realise that any British troops was anywhere near the Irrawaddy, this side, our side. So, anyway, we done all that, and then we had to make our perimeter for the night, because we're right now inside Japanese territory. Japanese was all the way, the river was one side with the Japanese, and right way around us was Japanese, which, as I say, the Gurkhas had already patrolled some. So, we took our... made our perimeter, which is about 100, you've heard of these perimeters we used to make, didn't you? Triangular. 1, 2, 3. Everything went inside, and we dug our, see what I mean? They're all on this triangle. So anyway, we dug our perimeter defences and had our machine guns such a situated right on each angle and all that sort of thing. And anyway, after... Well, always very quiet, but after stand, we were all staying too in the evening, you know, for an hour before sunset, you know, that sort of thing. So we stood too, and after stand too, I sat down under a tree, just like that, and our trenches was just there, only a matter of 2 or 3 hours away. Oh, and we parked our, oh, I must tell you that we took 4 jeeps and trailers belonging to the Worcesters, full of ammunition and stuff, and 4 jeeps and trailers come from headquarters, which was Indian Drive. Well, of course, with Indian Division. So when they come from divisional headquarters, they'd always send Indian troops. So we had 4, so I was in charge of 4 English drivers and these 4 Indian drivers. Do you understand what I mean? So, as I say, we stood two, and I stood there, and presently, and we had the jeeps in the middle of it, more or less in the middle of the perimeter. So I heard this jabbering going on in the night, so I thought it was my Indian drivers. So I says to him, "Hey, Shabro," like that. "Shabro, shut up," I thought you know that. So never took that notice. So as I say, it was all quiet, nobody talked, only I could hear this jabbering went on louder. So I thought, well, one good, I'd better get up and stop them, you know, so I goes up. So instead of saying any more in the Hindustani, I said, "For Christ's sake, shut up." And I walked up, it was 3 Japanese I was talking to. These Japanese had walked through our perimeter. I'll tell you about it presently. And there they were. So, and of course, I'd left my rifle up against a tree, you know, just, you know, only 2 pieces of rifle. I was then more or less clean fatigue. So I see them pull one of them. He pulled out a grenade to throw at me. And I jumped, fell straight, pushed myself straight. Lucky I was in clean fatigue.